Welcome to the Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, Hordes, and whatever else is on our minds. This episode contains an overview of the latest month in review as compiled by Lunatic Calm on the Privateer Press forums. We won't be going over every item in the month in review, so head over to the Privateer Press forums to get a more complete list. So for now, sit back and enjoy the smooth sound of clarification and errata.
We know not everybody who plays War Machine or Hordes goes to the forums to check on these rulings, so I figured we'd probably give a rundown on a few of the top ones to give everybody a
good Cliff's Notes
of
the month's review. So yeah, we want to provide just a brief Cliff's Notes version of these rulings and errata, so you guys can listen to us and then maybe go to the forums if you want a little bit more detail. So the first one is regarding Epic Lilith's feat in the No Quarter. The No Quarter seemed to have indicated that her feat applies to a model or a unit, when in fact it applies to models' units. Is that right?
That's correct.
That is correct.
Which is a huge, I wouldn't say change, because that's the way it is in the book and the card.
Right,
but,
right.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a typo in the magazine.
Yeah, it was a little confusing. I can understand that. The second one was that the Deathjack's Unbound rule can't be used to remove a model from play if the Deathjack has 3 focus. So you can't give the Deathjack 3 focus and then decide to remove a model from play.
Right.
If it might be tactically sound at some point, but you can't do that.
Yep.
All right, the Precursor Knights. The unit attachment card has the new leader, the Battle Chaplain, and he has the Shield Wall rule, but it refers to the original Precursor Knight card and the definition on that card for Shield Wall. The problem is the base card's Shield Wall rule refers to the leader of the base unit.
Yes.
So it's a little confusing, but all it means is that when they move into Shield Wall, they move into the Shield Wall with the current leader.
Yeah, and actually this has an impact, meaning all instances of the rules, unit abilities,
mm-hmm.
like the Precursor has.
The officer always replaces the basic lieutenant or captain or whatever it is
exactly.
as the leader in the unit.
The Cephalix Overlords, they have a floating rule that lets them ignore certain terrain penalties, but it still does not let them charge over terrain or obstacles. Another one, if you have a friendly model in melee with an enemy model, and if you cast a pseudo-offensive spell on that enemy model that's in melee, and if you miss and end up randomizing to attack your own guy, that spell will automatically hit your friendly model because it's only a pseudo-offensive spell.
This would be...
Iron Flesh for Kador. You want to make their defense better, but, you know, prevent the rest of the unit from charging, and you miss, and then you hit your own guys hit automatically, which could end up being better in the long run.
All right, the next one involves the Idrian Skirmishers. Now, Dave, you play them a lot more than I've ever even seen them on table,
yes.
So why don't you go ahead and explain this one so I don't hose it up.
Okay, this is actually something that I noticed reading the rule that I was going to bring up when we talked about them in the future. Basically, their guide, which is kind of what they have instead of a standard bear, gives them the Huntsman rule, which is basically allows them to select the prey, just like the Blood Trackers. The way this rule is worded, if the guide dies, the unit keeps the Huntsman ability, and whatever prey or whatever unit is currently marked as prey stays marked as prey. They just don't gain the benefits. If the guide is returned to play later through, say, the Hieroclaimer's feat, then they immediately regain their bonus to hit and damage against whoever their prey was. If their prey had died in the meantime, as soon as the guide is returned to play, they pick a new prey.
So prey never goes away.
Prey never goes away.
Although it may not give you a benefit if the guide is gone.
Yes, and if the guide is gone when you kill your prey, you will not get to select a new one, but you will do so if the guide returns to play.
Right, right. Not that it matters, because that selected prey wouldn't give you any bonuses.
Exactly, yes.
Another one is Mortenebra's Void Gate spell. It's an AoE, and if an arc node is in the spell, in the area of effect of the spell, it cannot be used to channel spells. This clarification makes sure that you know that the caster of the spell, it doesn't matter whether the caster is in the AoE or not, it's the arc node that matters and its location. Resnick's Firestarter, the model that moves due to Firestarter, you do not get to change the facing of the model at the end of its movement. It moves directly toward the nearest, what, warrior model, Dave? Is that
yes.
how it works? Or no, it's the
nearest
friendly model.
And only then, warrior models will move.
Right,
but
right.
It moves towards the nearest model.
But
and
when
give
that,
them a big, fat hug.
Yes.
But then it has to end its movement still hugging that model. It right. cannot turn away from them and spurn their love.
Right. So if your model is being moved, you do not get to change its facing at the end of its movement.
That's correct.
Here's one that I guess people typically used all along, but now it's official. Solos can rally themselves.
That's big.
Yes.
Most people played it that way, but there wasn't anything really written in the books that stated that they could rally themselves.
Yeah. The Deathjack's Unbound rule. It says that when the Deathjack tries to kill its Warcaster, it has to use its focus to make attacks against the Warjack, or against the Warcaster. But the attacks that it makes against the Warcaster must be melee attacks. So you can't cast a spell, you can't use Necrovent, it's always got to try to hit with its tusks or its fists.
So no trying to manipulate your focus by using least efficient ways of killing your Warcaster. You have to kill him.
Exactly. The Dire Troll Blitzer gets D3 ranged attacks, and when it activates, And those D3 ranged attacks are all initial ranged attacks. So the fact that they're initial is very important. A warlock that wants to leech its own life force in order to get more fury can only do so in one chunk.
Yes.
So if you have the tough ability, for example, you can take yourself down to zero life, make your tough roll, assuming you make it. You cannot cut yourself for another point, so you have to do it in one chunk. When you counter slam, you're making a power attack slam.
So no counter charging centurions.
Correct. Resnick's Zealot's Rage ability does not let him perform slams. That's meant for only the Warjacks in his battle group.
I think this is wrong. He should be able to perform slams. He's a big man.
He's not a Voker.
He doesn't have a shield.
Yeah.
It's that big, bulky rack on
his
back.
He's got a rack. You're telling me he can't
down.
Knock people
around. He's got
the
shoulder pads too, right? Surely
he does.
Shoulder pad.
Let's just write PP and we'll get this one fixed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that means Vlad might be able to slam too with his shoulder
pads. Oh, shit. All right, never mind. Forget it. I take that back.
Awesome.
So now to actual fact rulings. There's an Errata to Xerxes and Iris' martial discipline ability. Tim, can you explain this one a little bit better?
Basically, there's wording. I don't remember exactly where in the wording of martial discipline, but the Errata basically states that it affects them as well as the models in the small and medium-based warrior models in their command. So basically, they can then draw line of sight through their own friendly models to enemy models, and they can also move through them as well. Playing both Scorn and Kador, I think it was just always kind of assumed that that's how it worked, because part of it does mention them, but I think erratting that was an important step too, just making sure everybody knew that.
This is my favorite one. The Scarlock can target itself with Sacrificial Lamb. So if Scar's down to only the Scarlock and she really needs that D6 focus next turn, Scarlock can sacrifice itself.
We are the crack Suicide Squad salute you.
That's right. There's a clarification on Vlad using Mimic and when he mimics Denegra's Shadowbind on her Sliver weapon. Somebody's going to have to explain this because I'm sure I'll hose this one up again.
All right. Well, basically, Vlad has two weapons, one which mimics and one does not. The mimicking weapon, Skirmisher, if he mimics Shadowbind, he Shadowbinds his target. He can then attack with Ruin as much as he wants without canceling Shadowbind. But if he attacks again with Skirmisher and he either mimics something else or attacks a different target, Shadowbind goes away on the first person.
So even if his second attack with Mimic, for example, even if he doesn't mimic Sliver, Shadowbind will still go away on the first target.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is basically what happens with Denegra anyway.
The confusing part, though, is that she always has Sliver.
Right, yes. But yeah, basically his next attack with that weapon cancels Shadowbind.
Right.
If he's remimicking it, it'll put it back on, but if he's not, it goes away.
Right. There's a clarification with Karchev and a lot of Warjack damaging abilities. There's always the issue with Karchev not being a warrior model nor a Warjack model, so there's a lot of questions about how he's damaged with certain abilities. The exhaustive list, you might want to go ahead and look on the fact rulings to find those out. So, but if you play Karchev, this one is one you definitely want to
get. Or someone in your group plays Karchev.
Or exactly. People actually play that model?
I think so.
Oh, my best list was him in a sack.
All right, Lord Rockbottom. He has his Paymaster ability, and it turns out that he can use any of those abilities, and this is, of course, assuming he has enough coins, he can use any of those abilities any number of times on any number of units.
Man's got a lot of money.
He does. There's a clarification on what base-to-base means, specifically for Darius and his half-jacks when he feats. What it means is that you have to have the jack next to the wreck marker. Cannot be on top of the wreck. They just have to be touching at one point.
Neither can Darius.
Or Darius.
Correct.
And really, this is a clarification on the base-to-base rule in general. So it probably applies to a lot more than just Darius's feat. Siege's Explosivo and Arlen Strangeway's Arcane Reinforcement. If you put both of those in the same jack, let's say a defender, if the defender shoots that AoE thanks to Explosivo, the blast damage is not magical.
Correct. So no shooting at a high-defense pistol wraith without boosting and hoping to catch it in the splash.
Right.
You have to directly hit it for Arcane Reinforcement to take effect.
Resnick's Witch Hound. It can be triggered more than once a turn, or more than once per attack, and multiple models can move multiple times. So, Dave, can you give me an example of how that might work?
I think the best way to sum this up is basically it's now Shadow Shift.
Okay.
In that regard, say someone drops an AoE on three Protectorate Warjacks, any model in Resnick's battle group, or any number of models in Resnick's battle group, can move any combination of times up to three. So Resnick can himself move three times.
Do you have to be damaged by it or just hit by
just
it?
Just hit.
Yes. And it's not direct hit, so AoEs and things like that.
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
That means one of those jacks could get up the field in a hurry if someone drops an AoE and catches three or four protector jacks under it.
All right, Dig In. We've always known that Dig In goes away if the dug in model is engaged or if it moves. We now know that if that model is placed or is moved or moves or anything like that, it loses Dig In.
Right. So power attack, push, the Seraph, Slipstreaming, and Tariff. That also dispels dug in now.
There's a clarification that says if you have focus on a Helldiver and the Helldiver burrows, that focus is not on the model any longer. It's removed. If the long gunner unit with the unit attachment lays out a suppressing fire AoE, when a model takes damage due to that AoE, the damage...
There is no arc associated right. with that damage.
It's like fire.
Yes.
So you would get the shield bonus, for example.
Yes, because the shield rules say that a shield applies unless the attack is in your back arc.
Right.
The
originates.
Yes.
Originates
in the back arc. The shield rules, I mean, it's an important distinction. The shield right. rules do not say attacks in your front arc benefit.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, so we have regular Kane. I'll give you an example. He feats... But Shay has Phantasm out there, and he's trying to shoot at something, and Phantasm is going to affect Kane. He has to snipe himself in order to sort of nullify Phantasm. Phantasm, I think, is -5 range.
-5 to the range.
So he needs to snipe himself for 5 if he wants to succeed against that attack. For a clearer example, we might want to check out the FAQ again. But
an extension of this, something worth mentioning real quick, is mm-hmm. Kane versus Bane Knights.
Mm-hmm.
If all the Bane Knights are in his control area and he feats, they all immediately get nominated as targets. And as he shoots them, if the other ones begin moving out of his control radius, he can still shoot those guys if he has snipe up.
Right.
So, basically, it's a pulse originated from Kane, which basically designates his targets.
Mm-hmm.
And then he still has to have range to each guy he shoots.
And line Correct. Of sight.
And line of right. sight.
Yeah, right. they are just regular range
yes.
attacks. All right, well, that's it for the month in review. Now, Lunatic Column, he had another interesting thread up dealing with some official rules on timing of abilities.
And this is something we really needed for a little while now.
It is. There have been a lot of complicated rule interactions that wasn't clear how you resolve them. And now they have a set of guidelines that we can use to sort of figure out what happens when and what order, typically chosen by the player, as we'll find out.
There's two new defined game terms, active player and inactive player. We're going to use the terms AP for active player and IP for inactive player. If there is a model currently making an attack, then the AP is the controller of that model. If no model is currently making an attack, then the AP is the player whose turn it is. The IP is the player that is not the AP. Pretty standard. It takes the attacker and defender rules and kind of
generalizes them
in an easier way to understand.
Sure.
The general rule of timing is that at any given time when abilities may resolve, such as attack, hit, or end activation, the AP chooses the order in which abilities on his models resolve, and then the IP chooses the order in which abilities on his models resolve. Do what you want when you want, basically, for
yeah.
most.
And it's clear that the active player goes first.
Right. After the attack is resolved, even though at this point the attack is resolved, the designation of AP and IP remains as it was during the attack until all effects in this sequence are finished. First, resolve all of the automatic damage / destruction / removal effects. Next, resolve AP effects that do not involve making attacks. Then resolve all IP effects, which may include attacks. Finally, resolve all AP effects that involve making attacks.
In general, the active player's abilities do trump. However, the inactive player makes any attacks before the active player does, which is an interesting twist. And one thing that's worth mentioning here is I definitely suggest anybody who wants to read more about this to check this out on the forums. But one thing that's mentioned further down in the thread is that during inactive player's attacks, the roles do switch for the purpose of that attack.
Right.
Right.
And, I mean, that's not explicitly stated here, but...
It can get confusing yeah. if you're not... paying attention.
Absolutely. And there are a number of examples in the thread, and we're just going to go ahead and link to that in the show notes and highly recommend that anybody who plays any faction, pretty much,
yeah.
read these to be familiar with them, because now that it is a defined practice, this is what you're going to see in large tournaments and whatnot, and so just so everybody knows what to expect.
We should point out that we're reading these rules verbatim from the thread. These are Lunatic Calm's words. Don't think that we're just making this up.
Absolutely. We're not?
I didn't think so. Well, that's all for this episode. Once again, thanks to Lunatic Calm for creating the month in review, and we'll catch you next time on the Iron Agenda.